storytelling for Portland youth through workshops and events. Again, that's Episode 1, Brisk, by PDX Cocoon on Thursday, March 12th, 5 p.m. at Lola's Room, below the Crystal Ballroom at 1332 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'd sure hate to be left out.
KBOO Community Radio invites you to our springtime open house and live in-studio performance of Mama C, Saturday, March 21st, from 1 to 5 p.m. Tour the KBOO studios and meet your community. Share refreshments and talk with other listeners, program hosts, volunteers, and KBOO staff. See how our communities intersect and work together to create this amazing community radio station. We'll also have a live performance by Mama C, an accomplished musician, poet, and MC, as well as a former Black Panther and political refugee who fled the U.S. in early 1970s for Tanzania. Again, that's Saturday, March 21st, from 1 to 5 p.m., an open house and live performance by Mama C at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We look forward to seeing you.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is William Isle, chairman of the Cowlitz Indian Tribe, here to celebrate the, basically, let's just call this what it is, the return. The U.S. is giving the Cowlitz people back land that the Cowlitz people have owned since time immemorial, since many centuries before any white people arrived here. But nonetheless, here we are celebrating white people giving Cowlitz people their land back. How many times do we have to go through this? It's like a kind of like Groundhog's Day in a weird way. But the stark difference here, if you read any of the Associated Press press releases, any of those wire stories, and you read the actual story, which is available on the Cowlitz Tribe's website, you'll see that these are two different worlds, two different nations. Nonetheless, it is good that the Cowlitz people will have jurisdiction over their own land to a certain extent. The law on Indian land and U.S. federal law still are not exactly in step. And I commend anyone's attention who is curious about this. I commend your attention to a piece by Ada Pecos Melton called Indigenous Justice Systems and Tribal Society. I'm going to put that up on the KBOO website because we refer to this a lot on Air Cascadia when we speak about First Nations, Indigenous people, Indian tribes, that sort of thing. That's what we're here to talk about, though, today. And I am honored and delighted to welcome William Isle, the chairman of the Cowlitz Tribe, to the KBOO airwaves. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning, Chris, and thank you for having me on today. This is, an auspicious day following some tremendous success for our people, and thank you for recognizing that. That's very significant, that especially in Portland, I think there's the environment is just right to understand some of the things that go about to return land to our people, and it's way more complicated than anyone can imagine, and it's of course all founded in the Congress's concepts of how Indians can get their land or have their land back in a restoration process. And so we've been in that process now for 12 years, but certainly long before that, we've been working on this. I started this myself individually in 1992 when I came on the tribal council looking at what it would take to get our land and to give our people the same equal footing as the other tribes in the Northwest and in the country have an economic opportunity that brings to them.
Well, yeah, all of this too stems from these treaties. 1855, of course, it was a hideous turning point, and we have the Governor Isaac Ingalls Stevens to thank for that horror. But during the Indian Wars of 1855 to 1856. Many Cowlitz supported American troops, and so the idea that any of this should be disputed is absurd. The land belongs to the Cowlitz people. These are all tribes of river. These are river nations, and in a sense, Salish speaking and all other peoples up and down the river share common heritage, I believe. 1910, too, the tribe reorganized itself, and you had elected officers and a board of directors. Can you bring our listeners up to speed on why this is of great significance today?
Well, certainly that you've done your homework. I really appreciate you looking at that. My grandfather was the treasurer of the tribe in 1910. I found a document from the chairman of the congressional committee that dealt with Indian issues to my grandfather talking about our land claim. And so that's the significance of the event here. Just 2 days ago, here's my grandfather over 100 years ago working on this issue, trying to get us land and trying to get settlement for the 3,000 square miles of the land that we once held in Southwest Washington. And so that's just a minor weight of the measure, because, of course, generations after that have been lost. And so there's... our people are just scattered across the land. We were not given a place, so we had to be scattered. And so now this is a huge opportunity for them to come home, and there'll be economic opportunity for those that want to be near our reservation. It's a minor piece of land, 152 acres, in comparison to the millions of acres that were lost when President Lincoln's President Grant, I believe, was the one that signed them over by presidential proclamation to settlement. And so, but now at 152 acres, it's going to be a very significant opportunity for the tribe, and certainly it's going to put us back into the forefront for our people to be able to really, really make a difference for the tribe, for our future generations, but also for the greater community.
And, of course, economic opportunities as well. I have a quote here that I really want to share with listeners. And this is, again, back to 1919, Bureau of Indian Affairs Special Agent Charles Robin had this to say: "The Cowlitz tribe was a powerful tribe. They were independent, fearless, and aggressive, and they refused to subordinate themselves to the white man by entering into a treaty with him. Their descendants have the same qualities which placed their ancestors in the position of leaders." Those are strong words. And can we expect, is there any sort of work going on with the Cowlitz people and other First Nations around, or other river tribes, river people, to get more land ceded back to tribal members?
Well, here's a little bit of a perspective on that, Chris. The Cowlitz petition for this land placed us in a holding pattern, and And part of what happened when the Obama administration came forward is that they were ready to act and move, but then there was this Carcieri decision that came down and was a conundrum for the BIA. And but because we were in the position we were in, we have a unique opportunity having to provide proof that we existed now for over 100 years, going back to when my grandfather was doing that. We have a strong history, a tremendous history for that was used for recognition. It was used for land claims. And now we become the forefront of this Carcieri issue because in looking at a solution, the conundrum of allowing Indians to get land back now around the Indian Reorganization Act in 1934, we have created a path working with the Bureau of Indian Affairs in D.C. and in Portland to that a path that other tribes will now take. And it's a 26-page opinion by the solicitor's office in Washington, D.C. Chris, you'll have to get that, take a look at it.
Yes.
It is a document that defines the necessity of a tribe's participation in all forms of contact with the federal government. And we provided a lot of that in our federal court when some of the opposition from a local Oregon tribe and the other gaming interest in Clark County filed appeals on our decision. And, of course, Judge Rothstein dismissed all of those appeals. And that enabled the federal government to follow through on their promise. And we really appreciate the work of our local regional director, Stan Speaks, and then our assistant secretary in Washington, D.C., Kevin Washburn. Mm-hmm. He's been tremendous, and his predecessor is Larry Echohawk. Both people, both honorable men that I've grown to like and know over the last 6 years. So, yeah, it's been quite an experience, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share some of that.
Yeah, it's been a long road. Stanley Speaks. He's with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, I believe. He's the head of that. And I know, though, that a lot of people, a lot of First Nations, tribal people, Indians, have issues with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and feel that they don't always speak for the people who are living on the reservation and all across the country and here of course, they are too swayed by the dictates of the federal government, and they don't hear voices on the reservations. Have you?
I hear what they're saying, you know, and I'm very sympathetic. I know that there's been a philosophy in the BIA that goes back to the time when the BIA was an arm of the Department of War, because in fact that was the main purpose of the BIA.
Yes.
and so now they've come around, you know, in 120 years or so since they changed to Interior, but I think that it's a system that, of course, it's a political football in a lot of ways, and so you need to work with the system as much as possible, and that's what we've had to do. The rules change. They keep moving the finish line every time you turn around, and you just have to push forward and be persistent and be patient, and we have to overwhelm them with our patience.
Yeah, that's been the tactic. Hopefully it makes people nervous and move faster. We have only about a minute left. I want to ask you one final question that is on a lot of people's minds, I think, on the rape on reservations, the numbers are astronomical and terrifying. And a lot of the cases go unprosecuted. People don't report for the reasons I want to talk about because of the law, to what extent tribal people able to apply their own laws, to enact laws, and to use tribal law to take care of some of these issues on reservations, because the federal government's approach to these issues seems to be unsatisfactory. What we're going to have you back because we're down to the final minute here. But law on tribal land, will this change anything for you, for the Cowlitz people?
Well, yes, it does. And we do have a small reservation, but we have family that is across the country, but especially in the Northwest, we have family on the reservations. And it hits home with me. It hits home personally. It hits home with our tribe. We have a domestic violence sexual assault program that is equal to any in the country, and they are just located right across the river in Vancouver, and we provide services to Native women in the region.
We've gone over time. I'd love to have you back very, very soon.
Yeah.
This has been a terrific conversation. Thank you for your time. We are delighted to have you. My guest has been William Isle. He's the chairman of the Cowlitz Indian Tribe. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. Tammy Dean engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.